Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
This is Paul Hawksby. And
this is Max Rushton.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Well, Pat Nevin, former Scotland, Chelsea and Everton winger, and pundit, of course, has written a fine autobiography, The Accidental Footballer. And he joined us for a chat about that, which we very much enjoyed.
He was great. I think you could I could talk to him for hours.
He was very interesting.
He'd want to listen to me for hours is a different question. Yeah, but he was brilliant. Yeah.
He was very good. We were also joined this afternoon by Danny Kelly, who dipped into the My Sporting Life archive. And we
traumatic
about,
for you, wasn't it?
Well, not so much traumatic, but it took me back. Mm. It took me back to my youth. As we spoke about Eric Bristow. And, well, that's about it. We had a bit of a conversation, didn't we, about various things?
Yeah.
And, well, here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Max.
Good afternoon, Paul. Good afternoon, everybody. I found myself getting quite emotional watching. I mean, I know that football fans are important. I don't think we need to say it again, do we? But I don't know if you found that watching the games yesterday, and I was watching the Brighton City highlights this morning, and just getting quite emotional about how happy they were about Dan Burns' winning goal, and you know that moment where I don't know if it was a foul. I don't know if that's a sending off. I felt Welbeck made a lot of it, but just every moment of what it's like to be a fan when an opposition defender, you know, denies a goal-scoring opportunity. You know, there's the screaming for the red card, then there's the delight in the red card, and then there's the sort of waving cheerio that hasn't happened. And I wonder as well, you know, that 22-man brawl, or it might have been 21.
Yeah.
I think, I can't remember, there was one Leicester player. Well, I mean, is it Luke Thomas? I mean,
just watched on.
Just standing there going, what are you all doing?
Yeah.
But there haven't been any melees. Have there been any? We've missed all these brawls because there aren't fans there to inspire the players to push
in
each other about.
I mean, fighting has started. That seems close. I probably did say that, didn't I? starting a fight. I have a cold. Starting a fight in an empty house is literally what it is, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, totally.
No one wants to do that. I got there in the end.
Yeah, and they are quite. I was chatting about it this morning with Barry saying, you know, they're sort of like, when they really get good, the melees, they're like a rolling ball, aren't they? Because at one point they sort of start somewhere and that's where the centre of it is. And then it moves away, but there are still two people pushing each other. Yeah. And then they realise, oh, we're not in the middle of the melee anymore. We need to get in. And then Adam Hurry from Football Clichés was saying it's sort of, you get peacemakers and then you get meta peacemakers. You know, no one is trying to fight now. They're all just being the peacemaker. But I don't know, I just had a thoroughly enjoyable time with all of that football yesterday, and just seeing fans get excited.
I mean, it took a while to realise it wasn't an effect. You know what I mean? You know, you're kind of expecting the effects to be there, and thankfully it was the real thing.
I suppose the Man United wouldn't have had lots of Glazer out effects, would they?
Yeah.
That would have been quite a good effect to put in earlier in the season.
If there was something riding on that Cavani goal, do you think they would have spent a bit more time on VAR? And the fact that they thought, this is a great goal, we don't want to rule it out. And he probably hasn't touched it, and it probably isn't a goal, but it doesn't matter, does it? Not going to affect anything in the league table.
I mean, VAR is so... I mean, that's the problem, isn't it, of all the problems with VAR? It's so random that there are just continual wrong decisions. You know, the Werner penalty, the first half, which is much—it's more of a penalty than the second one, isn't it? And then the Cavani offside, which is so offside. And it is really easy to watch that ball because all you need to do, either they get Snicko in.
Yeah.
You know, if Mariah Erasmus had been on VAR, just rock and roll it there two or three
but
times.
But you look at it and it doesn't look like Fernandez has touched it.
No, so, and then I think Ruben Dias handball, you know, it's a blatant handball that was just, forget that one.
Yeah.
So I also like to, and I think I brought this up before, discuss the Paul Doyle law, which I have tried to get you on board with.
Oh, yeah.
You're not interested. Ali McCoist isn't interested. The idea being, right, and this is relevant for the Chelsea penalty, for the one that wasn't given and the one that was, mm-hmm. is that if you commit a foul in the box but it doesn't deny a clear goal-scoring opportunity, it should just be a free kick from wherever that is. People love free kicks.
Free kick in the box?
Yeah.
Like they used to give for obstruction, exactly. when obstruction was a thing.
Because that Fofana foul on
which you only get those now, of course, for back passes, of course. Don't you? That's the only reason you ever get a free kick inside the
and
box.
And they're good fun. There are too many penalties.
10 men on the line. It's always a joy. Isn't someone trying to ping it in the top corner?
100%. And, that, you know, that I don't know if Fofana, he just touches Werner, but I think that a penalty is too big a punishment. Yeah.
I mean, that game as well, the Perez miss at the end. Oh. I mean, I don't want to put any pressure on Ozzy Perez, but that's the Champions League, mate. I don't want to make you feel bad.
Who would you put more money on? Perez, you know, if you said, right, there are going to be two moments which decide the Champions League, and one is Ayoze Perez, ball on the floor, rolling towards him at a nice pace, and one is Alisson lumbering up for a corner.
Yeah.
And what's more likely to go in?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It was thoroughly enjoyable.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
We're dipping into the My Sporting Life archive once again. As we said, you can listen back to these long-form interviews with the legends of sport on the TalkSport app, and they're all fascinating chats. Eric Bristow is the subject, the late great darts legend today, and Danny Kelly rejoins us. Hi, Dan.
I'm great, thank you. How's everyone there? All good?
Yeah, well, not bad. Now, I've just been telling Max and Jamie, our producer today, that I talked to Eric about this back in the day. I live around the corner from Eric, and we're going to play a clip in a minute that backs this up. But he had a little gang of Herberts that he used to sit around on his wall, and we used to be terrorised going down. So you go and play football, even going to school. You go down Eric's Road, and you'd be terrorised.
We're not giving too much away. This is off the Albion Road in Stoke Newington.
That's right.
It?
This is exactly it. Yeah,
and I've researched you very deeply, Paul.
I mean, scarred for life.
And
here,
I told Eric, and he laughed. I said, "You used to frighten the life out of us." And he said, "Oh yeah, I know." And he loved it. It was quite.
I can only imagine him in like a big darts shirt and little shorts.
No, darts. He was quite. They were all of them. They were a scary bunch.
Well, listen, the fun of this was that I watched the darts like everyone else, but I didn't know much about Eric Bristow, did the research and stuff. It turned out he was a fantastic talker, and this is another one, a bit like Jimmy White the other day when we talked about it, where you could just play out, it's almost impossible to pull out the clips. You could just play the whole thing. It's all one highlight after another. And well, I suppose we should start, Paul, with him talking about being in the gang that terrorised the teenage Hawksby. <Yeah. laughs>
Them days, either we were a gang or he wasn't. You know what I mean? There was loads of gangs around where we was. You know what I mean? So my gang was like every other gang. He'd steal cars, he'd break people's houses. It was like it wasn't anything wrong. You know what I mean? It was like, that's the sort of thing you'd done. You know what I mean?
Well, but hang on. Let's be frank. What if someone broke into your house now and nicked your car? What would you think about it?
Oh, yeah, that's it. I understand. Yeah. I mean, we wasn't bad burglars. We didn't rip the place up. Some of these bad burglars, they just ripped the place up and everything. We left everything nice. You know what I mean?
There's a bit in the book. I mean, you're very proud of that fact, Eric, that you weren't one of these people who would destroy people's houses and all the rest of it. There's a story in the book that one of your co-criminals stopped one day and cooked himself English breakfast in someone's house.
He's going through the house and whatever, and then you smell cooking, you know, and you think, what the hell's going on? He's going to the kitchen, he's doing eggs and bacon and whatever. He had no fear.
Yeah, it could have been
the
worse.
The good burglars.
The home of the good burglars. There was a gang. There was a couple of little 8 and 9 year olds in there, and they were as bad as the big kids as well. Honestly, it was like Fagin. Anyway,
they didn't want the full English breakfast. They went for the chicken dippers, didn't they?
They probably did. Yeah, the fish fingers. It was a very entertaining chat. This, and obviously the darts chat and the kind of his rise through that. I think there is a plaque outside the Red Lion Pub in Stoke Newington where he used to go and practice still, Danny, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I got a great sense. You'd have enjoyed it, Paul, and probably you'll get a chance to listen back to it now on the app. But there's a great sense of place in that first third of the show when we talked about him growing up and even in the early parts of his darts career. Because, yes, you're right, Stoke Newington, the North London scene, and gradually... sort of moving out from North London to include all of the capital city before he then takes on the rest of the country. He speaks very, very descriptively of working class life. There's no other word for it. He spoke about the way working class people were back in the day. Paul, you and I think we're both from that part of the world. We would recognise a lot of the the things he was talking about, including the pub circuit and playing, often playing against six or seven people a night and taking their money off them.
He made his life up in the Potteries, of course, when he moved out of London. Mm. And that's where, of course, he encountered Phil the Power.
Well, yeah, and this was something I was really interested in talking to him about, because he can genuinely claim to have been Phil the Power Taylor's mentor. I don't suppose he knew that Phil would go on to dominate the sport and indeed reduce Eric's chances of ever being world champion again, but he really was very, very involved with Taylor right at the start of Phil's career.
I wanted to get him out in the big boy world in the tournaments, so I took him to Canadian Open. He lost first round. I took him to the North American Open in Vegas. He lost first round. And he sat there in tears. I can't do this anymore. I'm wasting my time.
Am I right in thinking that you lent him a significant amount of money to try and get him up and running?
I didn't lend him money. I just paid for everything. So
okay,
just
sorry.
Same thing, you know what I mean? But it wasn't I didn't do it. I didn't want a percentage of him, or I didn't want... It was just...
I bet you wish you had a percentage of him now.
No, that's money don't mean nothing to me, so there's no problem with that. So, I mean, I just wanted to make him world champion. It was just like a little thing for me. And what I enjoyed, it was like John Lowe and a few others. As the first couple of years went by and he wasn't doing very well, John Lowe and a few others said to me, what are you sponsoring him for? He's useless. He'll never win anything. I said, well, we'll see what he wins in another two or three years. I mean, then he started winning. He won a Canadian Open. He was getting match fit, what I called. He could play a long day tournament then. You know, he'd play one game at 10 o'clock in the morning, one at 1 in the afternoon, 2 o'clock, afternoon, 3 o'clock. He could do it all day. So my little dream was to train him up, get him into the World Championship and sit down there and watch him beat somebody in the World Final and just go to everybody, well, I told you I was right.
Interesting. And Phil's done something similar sort of subsequently. Danny, we've got to go to Steve Clark very shortly. We're not going to get a chance to play that third clip, but
not to worry. I just wondered, Paul, if you recognised your own accent there before you had the elocution.
It's a great boy, that much deeper
it's
voice.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
I can hear him shouting at me across the road, and me trying to sprint home crying,
losing no your lunch money again.
No false modesty. It's a fantastic listen if you get a chance.
Yeah, brilliant. We'll catch up with you next week.
Cheers,
Danny. Thanks very much.
Of course you will. Cheers, men. Bye.
The My Sporting Life archive, as we said, is available on the app, and I'm sure the Eric Bristow one will be a fascinating listen. The bit we didn't get round to was Bobby George in the 1980 World Championship final, and there's lots of great stories on there, I'm sure. I'm going to go and check that out. Yeah.
That's how you've got to mention that he'd transcended, you know, not just darts, but sport. You know, it was just huge. I mean, that sort of Gods of Snooker documentary, it's a similar thing, isn't it? I think younger listeners would think, you know, darts players are quite famous, but these guys were superstars. Yeah.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from Talk Sport.
Oh. They're funny things, press conferences, aren't they? And I know they have to happen, and sometimes something interesting happens. I mean, just think about, you know, the questions that get asked, and then what's he meant to say? Are you happy with the balance of the squad? What's he going to say? No, not really. We've only got left backs. Yeah. Is it hard to call players who didn't make the squad? No, it was great. I really revelled in it. Yeah. I revelled in ringing up people saying, your one chance of getting to a major tournament and I've blown it for you. Does it mean more because it's a major tournament? No, not really. I prefer friendlies and the Nations League. Are you excited? No, not really. Right. I fancy the summer off. I'm a bit gutted we qualified.
He doesn't look massively excited.
No, he doesn't.
I think inside he is.
Will the players who've got European finals turn up later? No, they're going to. I'm not allowing them to play in the Europa League and the Champions League final. I mean, you know, I know something's got to happen.
Maybe
I don't know.
You should
I
just turned into press officer, Mr. Sarcastic.
I turned into Andy Jacobs there for
so
a minute.
Every time Steve leans into the mic to answer the question, you'd go, no. They're not going to play. We won't let them join us.
I mean, it's not easy to think of a question that isn't obvious. But you know, what are you meant to do? I mean, I don't know. We're all dance the dance, don't we? Yeah. But there we go. There's my view of it all. As in, what's he going to say? He can't say anything. It is a bit like post match, isn't it? Happy with that performance? You've lost 3-0? No, not really. Yeah, I'm delighted. Anyway, I finished now.
I remember
Paul.
Going to some press conferences, and in the end, I mean, but the Terry Venables ones were always a joy when he was at Tottenham, because he would walk into the room and all the press, these are long before the days everybody had PA systems, everybody sat down and, you know, it was all an AV extravaganza with lots of spot. He'd just wander into the Spurs lounge and be handed a half a lager. It's like the same reminder. Terry would get handed a half a lager and he'd wander into this kind of sort of pack of journalists all standing there with their little tape recorders, and then they wouldn't even ask a question. He'd just start speaking. You wouldn't have, because he'd just give you what he thought of the game, and then the questions would flow from that. But often there wasn't a question to kick it off.
He'd
have a little sip of his half a lager and then hold call. And lots of managers were like that. They used to be a lot of fun, those ones, when you used to have this great scrum of journalists right in the, you know, not sticking the tape recorder on the table, or that, you know, just basically right up into their faces, really close to them. Kenny Dalglish was always a joy. He was really funny, very sarcastic to some of the journalists who asked him daft questions.
I'll bring those back. Yeah. I remember Jerry Francis being quite funny when Spurs were doing quite well. Very rare occasion. I think they'd beaten Man United 4-1 or something. Mm. Even Chris Armstrong had scored two. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, it was a New
and,
Year's
And the
Christmas
question was, you know, how did you feel when Man United went one up? And he went, great. Cheers, mate.
In the pouring rain, I seem to remember.
I didn't,
and
because we took that, I was going to really spend a long time asking you the Daily Star fact of the day.
Okay, well,
do you want to know
it anyway?
How many Earths do you reckon you could fit inside the sun?
How many Earths could you fit inside the sun?
Yeah.
20.
No, higher.
60.
If you keep going up at this rate, we're going to be here for a long time.
I'll do one more. Is it lower?
It's higher.
It's higher, okay. Oh, 200.
1.3 million.
You get 3 million.
You're clueless when it comes to the size of the sun, aren't you, Paul?
I mean, it's clearly not giving off enough heat at the moment. You could probably fit two Earths in here at the moment. The big breaking news for me, I couldn't believe, seeing pictures of Michelle Dockery as Lady Mary, is that they're making Downton Abbey 2. They're making another Downton Abbey film.
I missed the first one. I presume it's impossible to keep up.
Well, it's Downton Abbey 2 Electric Boogaloo, apparently it's called. And it's great. So
okay.
I can't wait
to see
it.
I'm really looking forward to it.
That was the big shock news. Also, we saw Marcus Rashford in double denim today.
Yes.
He's for the good people at Levi's. Can you get away with that?
Occasionally do it here, but you can only see me from, you know, when if we get a clip gets tweeted out. Maybe that press conference rant, Mike, you'll only see half of me.
Yeah.
I must admit now, thinking about it, criticising a press conference for being blindingly obvious and then... giving you information that the sun is big.
Yeah.
It's perhaps slight hypocrisy
actually,
there.
My guesses were rubbish, though.
They were terrible.
Were really quite
really no idea.
To be honest, I wasn't that interested or invested in it.
Okay, well, you could have just said, if you'd said, I'm not interested, I wouldn't have carried on.
I could have said, I don't want to answer that question. Anyway, we'll move on.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Well, Hawksby and Max Rushton here on TalkSport. We'll chat to Tim Vickery over in Rio a little bit later on. Take any questions you have on players you've been linked with from South America. As always, TalkSport.com, text 81089, tweet to TSHNJ. Now, Pat Nevin, former Chelsea, Everton and Scotland winger, has his autobiography out. It's called The Accidental Footballer, and he joins us now. Pat, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me on.
Great pleasure.
Great to have you.
Yeah. It's an interesting title. And I suppose at the kind of at the core of it is that you were a man that absolutely loved football and playing football, but not necessarily the accepted lifestyle of the footballer.
Absolutely the case. And that continues to be the case just now. I kind of love the game and love playing it. Obviously, I love watching it as well now. And if I could play just now, I still would play just now. I do kick a ball now and again. But all the other side of it, I wasn't really interested in. I had my own interest in my own part of my life that I wanted to live. And I didn't want to fit into what was the norm. Not because I thought I was any better or any worse. I was just, I had different interests. And being an outsider within it in the end became a really interesting thing to do because I see it with eyes of like us, you know what I mean? You're like, and not like a footballer, I see it. And things that they think are normal, or thought were normal, I thought were really, really weird. And so I've been meaning to write this for years and years and years. I just kind of put it off for quite a long time. And then I started writing that a while back. And as soon as I started tapping away at typewriter, it just flowed out because I'd never bothered to look back, you know. And then finally, after all these years, I looked back and I thought, actually, that's quite interesting. And that's actually quite funny as well. So it was great fun doing it.
Did you find dressing rooms difficult because you were slightly different or because, you know, you read Chekhov and things like that? Yeah. And you had huge love for music, which we'll get into. Did you find it difficult or were you generally just accepted but seen as different?
Probably accepted as and seen as different. Yeah, you get wound up. Look, if you go into any place, be it a workplace, be it a dressing rooms are particularly hard. And you're different, like you'll get some stick, you'll get wound up, they'll test you. The problem is when you try to be like the rest and you try to fit in, that's almost a weakness I always felt. Mm. So if you just keep on being yourself, after a while they respect you for it. So in general terms, it was okay, I'll admit, the Chelsea players called me Weirdo. That was my nickname. But, you know, I think it was said with some affection, most of the time. But it's like dressing rooms aren't always easy places. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. But you need to stand your corner. And the other side of it was, I come from the East End of Glasgow, you know, and you've got a tough upbringing there, and you kind of learn a lot of things. So I wasn't going to be cowed by it at all. If it was harder for others, I remember there's a few people in the book that, and one of them in particular was Graham Lasseau, had it a wee bit tougher. But, you know, I kind of slightly took Graham under my wing and made sure that he understood it's all right to be a wee bit different. Maybe I'd done too good a job there. What do you think?
Well, look, nothing had really changed for Graham, as you say, really. A few years on after you, the situation was much the same. The dressing room environment hadn't changed. So I just wonder, were there other players at that time that you saw as kindred spirits when you were playing and thought, you know, it's not bravery as such, but it's saying they're more willing to conform. But I think, you know, on a quiet day, they could be just like me. They could have the same interests as me, but they won't change.
See, I found them all really interesting as a kind of voyeuristic study of them, but not in a kind of dull way. I mean, I just liked looking at them as unusual personalities because they had such a different background to me. So I'd come from education and a different family background, and I hadn't been desperate to be a professional footballer, although I loved playing, as you mentioned before. But, you know, maybe some of them would try and see interest in my music. And I used to do this thing where this was the early days of videotapes, so I'd kind of clip them together and make these kind of mixed videotapes for the coach journeys. And I put four or five on in a row, and the lads were like, oh, that's not bad, Pat. And then I'd ruin it by putting one by the fall on, and they'd all start throwing things at me. So I kind of wound it up as well and wound myself up. But generally, I kind of found it quite a nice place. But I ask you and anybody listening, do you really hang about with all your mates at work? Is that what you do with all your life?
Well, I try and follow Paul home, but he honestly walks very quickly.
Well, the restraining order certainly helps.
There's something interesting, yeah. Pat, isn't there? That I think there's such a big difference between education and intelligence, and there is such a cliche that you know all footballers are thick, and in my experience, it's not true. Like you know, some are and some aren't. Like every other part of life, and I think that's an interesting. You know, you must have seen that that footballers that perhaps didn't have the same education that you had, but still, that didn't mean that they weren't bright.
I've met many people who've got PhDs and everything, and they're thick as mints. They're hell of a good at that. But and then you walk into a dressing room, the street smarts in every dressing room are right up there. And you know that. You've talked to players. You've mixed with them. And I remember journalists back in those days, they used to sort of say that footballers are all thickos. And okay, they don't have tertiary education, but they're not thick. And I used to say, you try surviving in that dressing room with the abuse, as in winding up abuse, and also the fun in the barbs. You need to be quick. You need to be good. You need to be strong-willed. And yeah, there are lots and lots of sharp players out there. And that, if I would say, if anything, they're above average, you know, of intelligence and pure intelligence, because you need sort of intelligence to be able to play football, because you have to work a lot of things out really quickly when you're on the pitch. I mean, it's not all of them, but that's the case with some of them. So I was maybe unlike them. I didn't look down on them. I mean, absolutely not. But you're allowed to be different. And I kind of, that was kind of the start of it. But did I have friends that were footballers? Yeah, some great lads. We got a guy called Colin Pates and John Bumpsy were brilliant mates at Chelsea. I mean, they were just basically like Monty Python every day. And you walk in and just laugh all day. I mean, this morning, I've got a really sore arm because I was standing next to Jason Cundy last night.
Oh, yeah.
And I've got a really good arm because he gets a bit excited.
He does.
At those Chelsea games.
So you're getting punched, pat, pat. He was giving you that, was he, all the time?
But, I mean, because there's people like Jason. Jason's, well, you all know Jason really well, but he's a smart, intelligent guy.
Yeah.
And he's a passionate guy. And he loves the football. And I've never felt negative. And that's the misunderstanding that people used to make. Oh, you're a bit different. You can't like them. Yeah, I like them perfectly well. Mm. Yeah, but don't spend my whole life with them. Part of it was a fear of I didn't want to get drawn into it all and it be everything about my life because I wanted to have another part of life as well.
Yeah.
But they did find it a bit weird, I'll be honest with you. And, you know, if they, when I did hide things for a while and then I thought I'm going to stop hiding it, it's too much fun. So I'd come in the morning and they'd say, what were you doing last night? And they'd say, I'm down at pub. What did you do, Pat? Well, I was standing in the wings at the Royal Ballet watching my friend Fiona as the principal in Swan Lake. at Covent Garden, and they look at me going, "What?" And it was fun to be able to kind of have a different life. But, you know, I generally, the vast majority were good, you know, really good fun. And that's the nice thing. Be able to tell stories about a lot of the people in the book, a lot of people that I went through. The vast majority of them people I liked and really enjoyed the company of. So that's why it was a joy writing about them.
Do you think it's changed now? I mean, you're still around clubs as a pundit. You're still going to games all the time and you speak to managers and players. I mean, do you think it's much easier to be an individual now in a dressing room?
I think it probably is a bit easier. I think there was a big change when a lot more foreign players came in and they had different cultural things. So you used to have one monoculture within football. And, you know, that was the expected way. And it wasn't just the players. You know, everybody else expected them to behave that way. And they kind of, they played up to it sometimes. But when other people come from other countries, you know, you couldn't really imagine Ruud Gullit going in with getting absolutely ratted every Saturday night. It's kind of not going to work. He's far too cool for that, you know. I mean, and a lot of players were like that. They came in and, you know, the game advanced in that level. But, you know, it didn't make it worse. There's some things about the game today that I think are much, much better, probably most things. But there's some things that I don't really kind of see as good as. And I do think it was much easier to have a little bit of fun within it. I spent my whole career, about 850 games, mostly laughing, and mostly laughing at myself, to be fair.
Yeah.
But in the end, I don't see quite as much laughter. And do you know, there's another thing. I was covering the game the other night. It was the Chelsea Women's. I watched their training session the night before. They just laughed their heads off the whole way through it.
Mm.
And maybe you're right. Maybe there's something that they all take it much more seriously. And I wonder, you know, like people say, oh, there's so much money in it. It must be much more stressful. No chance. It's exactly the opposite. If you're on 180 quid a week and you're worried about losing your job, that's more stressful than having earned 3 or 5 million in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, the stress comes from that end of it. So I'm not having that. There's more stress than that.
A lot of the book is about your love of music, and I knew that you loved music and had a massive passion for it. I didn't know that you ended up doing John Peel's admin at Radio 1. That's incredible.
Yeah, you know, there are kind of a lot of weird stories you would look at it, because I didn't tell anybody. I just went along living this kind of weird kind of life that wouldn't mix. If I went in and told the lads at training, I was in with Peely last night doing the show, they'd go, "John who?" You know, because it wouldn't make any, it would have no effect on them. So, you know, Peely became a friend. I'd been such a great admirer of his and what he did over the years. And he'd sometimes go on the show at night and say, "Yeah, I've got the famous footballer in tonight," and then move on. Nobody knew who it was. I loved that because I wasn't searching for fame. Mm-hmm. Peely and I had a lot in common because he was in an industry where lots of famous people and a lot of people, you know, there is a lot of people in those industries scrabbling for fame, aren't they? And we can hide it as much as we like and say showbiz world is we're all living in this one big happy house. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people fighting to get to the top, isn't there? There's a lot of scratching on the way. And the people like John and I, we didn't want that. We just wanted to do the love side of it. I loved the football, playing it. He loved the music. So all the other stuff we couldn't care less about. So he was an interesting, really interesting and great guy to get to know.
Maybe something else that set you apart was that you'd often go and see other teams play, which maybe other footballers didn't do at the time. And a mutual pal of ours, Adrian Thrills, one of your old flatmates, the NME journalist, told me years ago of a story of you two going, I think you went and watched Spurs play, and a Tottenham fan spotted you on the train, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's wild stuff. Like, I was Chelsea Player of the Year, and I was standing on the shelf. I mean, really? How does that work? But it's not, I wasn't supporting Spurs. I was going to see players like Mickey Hazard. Mm. I was going to see Glenn. I was going to learn. There's nothing wrong with that. That's absolutely fine. And they were a brilliant team to watch at the time. And I was learning a lot at the time. I was only 18, 19. Nobody had quite told me that Spurs and Chelsea kind of didn't mix. And on the way back, so the next year, I thought, you know, I'll just go to the game, and this time I played against Spurs. And then instead of going back to the team bus, I thought, I'll just get the trip, because I always get the trip home from White Hart Lane. Wrong idea, bad move. And one fan, yeah, I did pull a knife on me, but you know, I got away with it, and had a pretty sore knuckle afterwards. But it was one of those ones where I thought, maybe this kind of utter normality life that I want to live, maybe I have to kind of be sensible about it now and again. But I just, and London's such a great place though, and it's such a big place. You can be anonymous, and it's why, one of the many reasons that I absolutely fell in love with London. I love London. I'm talking to you now from the bridge, and I love being here. I live in Scotland, but I work here, and I love this place.
We're told a lot, you know, sport and politics shouldn't necessarily mix. And in the book, you talk about how you stood up, like post-match, Paul Cannaville, your teammate, had been racially abused, and you spoke up about it, and not just by opposition fans, by home fans as well. Mm-hmm. And you spoke out about that. And I wondered at that time if you felt kind of alone doing that.
I did. That's a good question. I did feel quite alone doing it. But I felt confused because, I mean, this is 1984. And I'd been involved in anti-apartheid stuff and anti-racism stuff. I was a student, remember, in Glasgow. Mm. So I come down and you'd hear thousands of people having these like racist chants. And I'm going, why is nobody speaking out about this? I couldn't get my head around it. And nobody was, because it was normality then, wasn't it? I don't know if you remember, but it was just people shrugged their shoulders. And, you know, that's the way life is. And I'm thinking, no, it's not. I'm not having that. And so I couldn't shut up about it. And I was seen as a bit of a big mouth by some people for sort of bringing it up. And I think a lot of sports journals at the time just thought, what's that got to do with us? And I used to say, well, everything. You know, we've got to do something about this. But, you know, we have to remember. And the great thing about this whole book is I didn't write it with what a lot of people do now, is look at old times and then judge them by today's standards. I tell you what it felt like at the time. And I actually felt the way I would feel today, and I suspect you and all of our listeners feel today, or the vast majority of listeners feel today, but it just wasn't the way in the culture at the time, and it needed to be changed. And, you know, we've worked hard over the years at changing it, and I've never stopped, and happily, mine's is not a lone voice anymore. On the nice positive side, which is not mentioned in the book, I've been given 2 doctorates for the work that I've done in the early days of that. So it's kind of proud that I was remembered for that, because I had to give up a degree early. I had to give up a year early to go and play football. So I got the letters after my name. I never used that doctorate except for one situation. Anytime I talked to my daughter, who's actually a real doctor, so I wind her up. She said, Dad. No, it's doctor. So he gets furious.
Medals on, there's basically medals on the table, Pat. You are an old school footballer after all. I have doctorates on the table.
Exactly. I'm a double doctor. I've been doing
it. I mean, just going back to, finally on this, the club's attitudes have changed. And at the time, Chelsea said, look, we don't disagree with the sentiment, but don't have a pop at your own fans. Don't turn on your own fans, because that was their concern. Because you said it was a lot of Chelsea fans who were turning on Paul Cannaville, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it happens to be Chelsea, just now that I'm talking about. I suspect most other clubs would have been exactly the same. Yeah. They would have said to their player, look, shut up. It's kind of dangerous. And particularly as me, I'm hanging about in tubes and getting knives pulled on me and stuff. Mm. You know, and I'm a very unusual character who goes to different places. They would have been worried about my safety, you know, as a kindness. And also, I was an asset as well to them.
Yeah.
And so I understood why they did it, but I wasn't having it. I wasn't accepting it. And, you know, if they said, well, they couldn't fine me for it. And they certainly wouldn't sack me because I was player of the year. So I doubt that was going to happen. But in reality, they did get me in and they said, look, we think you should stop doing that. And I said, good, that's interesting. I'm not going to like. But it's interesting to know you think that. But I think it was mostly due to caring consideration they thought I'd get in, because there were some dangerous people out there, weren't there? And they thought I would be attacked with those people. And so far, touch wood, not yet. Not many times anyway.
We'll chat more in a moment. Pat Nevin's chatting to us about his autobiography, The Accidental Footballer. We'll get his thoughts on Steve Clark's Scotland squad that was announced earlier on very shortly.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah! What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
We're chatting to Pat Nevin about his autobiography, The Accidental Footballer.
Yeah, getting lots of nice comments. And no nasty ones, very rare for anyone. Dave says, I had so much pleasure watching Pat play, even more listening to him, one of football's nice guys. Dan says, I'm a Fulham fan, therefore I wouldn't even eat a Chelsea bun, but Pat at Chelsea was a joy to watch. And he liked the Cocteau Twins, which are before my time, I would say. And Papaphone says, Pat, let me come on the coach with Howard Kendall. They were watching Harry Enfield, waiting for crowds to disperse, waiting for to wave to Lineker and Gazza at the last home game for Spurs. Thank you for that.
Oh, okay.
Dim
distant memories.
Yeah.
All the chapters, Pat, are named after songs. Quite an eclectic lineup from ABBA, the Jesus and Mary show. You've actually got a playlist at the back if people want to go and find the tracks, haven't you?
Well, oddly enough, I mean, each one of the tracks kind of tells a story or a line into what that chapter is about. But I just thought it was a good idea to put those tunes in because I like them all. And the idea is you've got a little ear sort of bug in your head when you're listening to it. But also I couldn't think of any better chapter names. So I just used songs. And it kind of works. I kind of like the idea of it. And you can either say you like them or you don't like them. It doesn't matter. But most of them are kind of good and danceable.
Somebody told me once that there was a kind of Scotland reception. It might have been before you went off to the Euros in 92. I don't know. We'll come on to that in a minute. And all the Scotland boys in the squad had to choose a song they would like played. And you chose a Sugar Cube song in Icelandic. Is that true?
It's nearly true. I'll tell you the whole story very, very quickly. So they asked me to come up. It was after my time in the Scotland squad. And they asked me to come up to entertain the kids. So I brought some songs up to listen. And said, it's a quiz I'm doing, right? And then I put four songs on that you have to choose which one of these is my favourite. And there was, you know, three quite well-known songs and a B-side of a Sugar Cube song in Icelandic. And then none of them went for that. And indeed, that was my favourite one, Birthday by the Sugar Cubes. But I just wanted to do it for a bit of fun and they all had a laugh with it. But in actual fact, a lot of the players were quite interested. I remember Alec McLeish saying to me once, God, that's rubbish you listen to. Who are you listening to now? And I said, The Justified Ancients of Moo Moo. And he started laughing. And
what?
He said, you're winding me up. Yeah, exactly. He said, you're winding me up. It's an absolute joke, Nevin. Honestly. So I never thought another thing about it. And then a year later, he came back and he said, I found this new band back called KLF. And I went, yes, that's The Justified Ancients of Moo Moo. It's the same band, mate.
Would you have given up, you know, if somebody said, look, you didn't have a football career, you weren't a beautiful wispy winger, but you were, you know, the bassist in an eclectic avant-garde 80s electro music act. Would you swap that?
I have to say that's not even difficult. I love the football playing too much. For football, I was a player and music, I was an absolute consumer. And there's no problem with that. I didn't actually want, because a lot of people, if you want to be a man, maybe you still want to be famous. I'd still have my back to that. To the audience, doing a Jesus and Mary chain back to the audience. But no, I was an absolute consumer. I never had any kind of want to do that. I've sang front man for a band once in my life. I sang for the Bluebells once in Glasgow. Wow. I sang a song called Letter from America. You might remember it by the Proclaimers.
Yeah.
Except I changed the words to When You Go, Will You Send Back Soonest to Sampdoria? Because I was a Celtic fan that was having a dig at Rangers. But no, I just loved it. I was absolutely, and still am. You can still find me, you know, in Dalston and East London DJing every now and again. Not over the last year and a bit, obviously. But it's just something you love because you meet nice people and good people. And there's no such thing as good or bad music. It's just what you like. And I kind of spent so much of my life doing that and trying to enjoy these things and find these bands that I thought it would get dulled one day, but it hasn't. So I'm looking forward to going to see gigs again, just as much as football fans are wanting to get back into those stadiums, because it's not the same without the fans there. It just isn't.
Absolutely. Finally, Pat, let's just get your thoughts on the Scotland squad. A couple of notable absentees. I mean, what do you make of the balance of the squad generally?
No, I like it because, look, the big names that we need are there. Notice the we in that, yeah. in that sentence. McGinn, you know, Armstrong, McTominay, Che Adams, by the way, he's a bit of a game changer for us. We needed a striker, and Che's made us better. Robertson and Tierney, beginning to get the best out of both of them together. I mean, that's typical Scotland, get two world-class players and both of them playing the same position. But Clarkie's now, and Clarkie's a mate. I phoned Clarkie yesterday morning and talked to him, and I was bending his ear and saying, you got to put Billy in. You got to put Billy Gilmore in, because he's going to be a big part of our future. And you might as well have him there now and learn. Now, I'm not saying he listened to me. However, Billy is in there, along with Nathan Patterson and David Turnbull at Celtic. And both Nathan of Rangers, David Turnbull of Celtic. And both of them are youngsters. All three of them are the future, and we need them in as quick as possible. So I'm really, really happy with that squad. And it's going to be as good as we can possibly get it. And even though this might shock a lot of people, I haven't an anti-English sentiment in my body and never have had. I really hope we stuff you.
Well, you had a tough group in 92, Germany and Holland. I mean, in this case, you know, Croatia are a good side and, you know, England are a decent side. But you think getting England is good because England, Scotland always generally do match terrified. Up well. You know, Scotland get under England's skin. So it, in some ways, it's better that than maybe getting the Germans or the Dutch, isn't it?
Maybe partially because, you know, there's a bit of it. We know them, you know, certainly if you're Robertson, if you're Tierney, if you're McTominay, you know all the players you're playing against. So you're not going to be spooked by them. So that's a kind of good thing, maybe more for Scotland than it is for England, I would suggest. I mean, we're big underdogs when we're playing against England. I mean, England are a fabulous team with unbelievable players. Now, I'm utterly jealous of the quality they've got. But I felt that way a few years back up at Hampden Park when we were seconds away from winning, you know, two great goals from Griffiths. So, you know, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility. But I mean, I played at Wembley once for Scotland against England. And again, it's in the book, the stories about that. The stupid thing, very typical of me. First time I'd ever been a Scotland-England game, I played. I got the tube home.
that's a recurring pattern there, that? Really. Yeah. So,
it is.
Terrific, Pat. Lovely to talk to you. We wish you well with the book. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers, Pat.
And thanks for having me on.
The Accidental Footballer by Pat Nevin is officially out tomorrow. It's a cracking read. There's some great stories in there. So we've had
a good man.
Scratched the surface, yeah, indeed.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. We'll do it all again tomorrow, and we'll have the birthday spread.
Of course we will. Yeah, looking forward to it.
Getting ready
for that. The comeback is on.
Indeed. So is it 17-2?
17-2,
17-2, comeback is on. Got some minor blip last week, but he'll be back tomorrow. So, yes, we'll see you then. If you can listen, great. If not, the podcast will be available around 5. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.